Okay, people, assembled people of the interwebs. Hello to you and your collective ears. This is episode 3 of the Midnight Insomnia podcast. So, I exhort you to do the following. Pull up a chair. Pump up the volume. Kick out the jams. Let the jams back in again. Fall down the stairs. Fill up your pants. Sew up the curtains. Pull up your trousers. Stitch up an uncle. Give up the chase. Tune in the cat. Fall out of bed. Bed in some plants. Fall out of love. Boil up some ham. Put down some frogs. Download a fridge. Sign up for life. Downplay some toast. Stone the crows. Peel an apple. Draw the curtains. Peel a banana. Annex a country. Start a riot. Pick a team. Turn the screw. Pickle the onion. Serve the customer. Answer the phone. Oil the wheels. Break the chain. Surf the web. Ride the wave. Hail the bus. Zip the trousers. Comb your hair. Steal a march. Give it back again. March some steel. Tie a yellow ribbon. Placate an aardvark. Drill a hole. Raid a pension fund. Crush a grape. Draw to a close. Press the flesh. March of time. Slice of cake. Trail of tears. Scoop of mash. Moment of madness. Orbit the sun. Extract the meaning. Surface to air. Program the video. Dodge the bullet. Round the bend. Covet an ox. Furrow a brow. Seize the momentum. Plow a barrow. Dig a hole. Purchase an app. Whistle a tune. Up the ante. Down the plug hole. Lower the temperature. Sew a button. Sew a button? Placate a mob. Traverse a roundabout. Spill some seed. Unleash the hounds. Time and tide. Witness an event. Stroll about. Drink some tea. polish a flag, burn a bridge, stir some soup, unfurl an envelope, varnish a cat, shred a receipt, load a gun, polish it off, reverse the decision, scratch the surface. Reset the clock. Detail the specifics. Surround the table. Surround the sound. Chair an argument. Proceed to gasp. Unfold your ears. Abdicate your tongue. Serenade the content. Banish the blues. Improvise the jazz. Chisel the rock. Marinate the opera. Stipple the wall. Dress the salad. Defenestrate the pleb. Bookmark the fear. Retract the ocelot. Dream the dream. Badger a badger. Don't tell Brian May. Outfox a fox. A stitch in time. A word in the shell. A poke in the eye. A piss in the wind. A hair in the gate. A turd in the bush. Some sellotape on the frames. A blue plaque on the shed. Back of the net. Quiz of the week. Soup of the day. Angle of descent. Voice of dissent. Pillar of the community. Mollify the crowd. Ditch the dish. Dish the ditch. Ameliorate my anxiety. Suffer the children. Save the document. Board up the windows. Soften the blow. Boil the egg. Chase the dragon. Spit the dog. Champion the wonder horse. Grease my palm. When, and only when, you have completed all of that, continue listening to the following preceding items. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, surely the introduction wasn't really that long. Well, you know, I think it was. But, you know, this show is an hour and a bit. Hey, it's the interwebs. There is no time limit. You know, we can be 2 hours. There's no rush. What are you worried about? Have you got anywhere special to be? Have you got anything better to be doing? No, because if you had, you clearly wouldn't be listening to this. So I think you need to take a long, hard look at your life and worry about whether an introduction to a free podcast that lasts several minutes rather than one or two really is the sort of thing that you ought to be wasting this amount of time questioning me about. And maybe, you know, you should just stop. and just let me get on with it. Ethelbert's Sunday morning. Ethelbert was past 90, but had never really picked direction in life or a gender. She had undergone so many sex change operations that she couldn't even remember which way they'd started out. Therefore, Ethelbert now compromised. A typical daily wardrobe consisted of black trousers and lilac jumper, cream skirt and football shirt, all leg warmers and a lumberjack shirt. A wispy beard was ever present, but being 90, that was kind of inevitable. Time was spent veering randomly between woodwork and knitting, Top Gear and Loose Women, The Sweeney and Murder, She Wrote, Andy McNab and Barbara Cartland. Two cats shared the house, one male, one female. There was a vague memory of having been married once or twice, but to what or whom was unclear. Having the first name Ethelbert was unfortunate enough, but such were the vicissitudes of having been born in 1920 that Ethelbert Gaylord had been cursed on both fronts. All 36 cats over the years had been called Leslie to simplify matters, and to use up the job lot of engraved collars Ethelbert had purchased during a drunken afternoon in Brighton in 1951. Recollections of the exact reason for this fortuitous purchase had gone for good now, but Ethelbert was still occasionally plagued by random memories of a small shop that only sold pet collars, envelopes, and surgical trusses. That would explain why Ethelbert had written 4,000 letters during 1952, but not why they had all been addressed to Lord Mountbatten, and all contained a vociferous complaint about the terrible toilet facilities on Hampstead Heath. Ethelbert cleared away the breakfast things, having, on principle, eaten a sumptuous fried breakfast every single morning since the day they abandoned rationing. Once again, it would be a running battle between clogged arteries and flatulence, but the flatulence would probably win again today, and Ethelbert would live to fry another day. The two Leslies ate a far healthier breakfast of smoked kippers and exhibited far less flatulence. The kitchen was unchanged since the day in 1943 that Ethelbert and Leslies 1 and 2 had moved into the house. The smell of washing up liquid and gin mingled with the dense cigar smoke that swirled around the room. The cats were very lucky to be at ground level with only the smell of damp slippers and mothballs to distract them from their opulent daily diet. Indeed, bearing in mind the amount of cigar smoke, fried bacon meets burnt saucepan smoke, and the occasional gin spill ending up in their water bowl, it was surprising that the average lifespan of all 34 previous Leslies was 19. This meant that, at their peak, there were 17 Leslies resident at once. That was when Ethelbert bought the trunk. Colin yawned expansively and looked at his watch, but the hands had stopped. So had the feet. The decision to buy a watch that was also an 18-inch scale model of Arthur Mullard was one he had seldom regretted during the last 17 years. But he had to now admit that, as the battery had run out 8 years ago, it may be time to invest in a more practical timepiece. Nevertheless, he estimated that about 7 hours had passed, so it was probably safe to come out from under the kitchen table. Gingerly and pedantically, he stood up, banging his head on the kitchen table. "Thatcher!" he exclaimed, which was the generic, all-purpose swear word he now employed in all situations, since an unfortunate episode in a Basingstoke crematorium in 1987 had forced him to forego all foul language. Pressing himself to the wall, he crept inexorably and tangentially towards the hallway. He knew that possible evil lurked in the hallway, or that evil possibly lurked in the hallway, or that possibly lurking in the hallway was some evil. But there's a limit to how long you can play count the kitchen chairs, and Colin had reached that limit after 3 hours. He didn't have any kitchen chairs. He ate breakfast standing up to avoid the onset of piles. He also ate breakfast by pouring alternate mouthfuls of cornflakes and milk into his mouth to avoid wear and tear on crockery and save on washing up liquid. Colin saved up all the money he would otherwise have spent on washing up liquid in a special jar. Once a month he used the money to treat himself to a new ball bearing. Colin had lots of special jars. In fact, he had a special room in which to keep all his special jars in. One of the jars contained 228 ball bearings. Another contained the wrapping from a pork pie he'd particularly enjoyed in Budley Salterton in March 1992. Another contained the condom which had aided him in losing his virginity in 1983, along with a variety of as yet unidentified life forms and a primitive prototype for some sort of farming implement. Next to this jar was one containing his mother's ashes and the spleen of an old school friend, which Colin arranged next to each other to illustrate the juxtaposition between life, death, and having your spleen removed with a spatula by a defrocked archdeacon. Passing by his special room, Colin couldn't help noting with satisfaction that the hand-engraved sign reading Colin's Special Room, No Trespassers, Hawkers or Anthropologists was glinting nicely in the sun. It had definitely been worth the effort in moving his kitchen 3 feet to the left in order to allow the sun to properly penetrate the hallway. Colin settled in front of the television and took out his snooker audience bingo card. There was no prize because it was a game of his own devising that only one other person in the world was allowed to play. As this was a world championship quarter-final, it should be plain sailing, although he and his competitor had each chosen one of the day's matches to watch on the red button by rolling a dice, so a full house was highly unlikely. Over the next half hour, Colin enthusiastically ticked off many familiar faces. The dice had been kind to him today. There was the bloke who looks a bit like the bloke who used to be Nigel in EastEnders, the woman who dresses like a mare, the woman who sits next to the woman who dresses like a mare, the bloke who looks like Richie Beno would have looked in 1978 if he'd been a pub landlord in Caerphilly, the bloke who looks like he's wearing a wig from an Absolutely sketch, the bloke who looks like Darren Goff but confusingly wears football shirts, the nice looking woman with the glasses. The bloke with Kenneth Kendall's nose, Peter Wingard's eyebrows, William Woolard's teeth, Brian Kant's elbows, Terry Scott's knees, Jenny Agutter's toes, and Felicity Kendall's handkerchief. The bloke with the tie who looks like he's about to spontaneously combust. The bloke who looks like the actor Nicholas Grace. The bloke who looks like Stuart Hall. The bloke who doesn't look like Tony Wilson. During the mid-session interval, Colin made himself an extra strong cup of tea to celebrate his success. It was only then that he noticed an opal fruit pile-up in his kitchen cupboard. This required immediate attention. Colin had formed the habit of going for an afternoon walk every day since July 1991. However, he did not take any water with him due to the total lack of public toilets within a 5-mile radius of his house. It was therefore his penchant to partake of opal fruits to quench his thirst during these perambulations. He removed the 5 packets of Starburst from the cupboard, crossing himself as he did so, conducted the ceremonial burning and flushing of the wrappers, and set to work replacing them with his own facsimile of the original wrapping emblazoned with the correct nomenclature. He also did this with Marathons and Jif. After the daily ritual of a video episode of Murder, She Wrote, Ethelbert went out to the garden. It was a generous plot of land with an enormous bordering hedge that obscured all but the roof of the house from view from the road. This was probably a good thing, considering some of the things that had happened in the garden over the years. Ethelbert ensured that this was the exact spot requiring weeding before kneeling down. Although very sprightly for 95, it would nevertheless take a while to get down and then back up again, so precision was the order of the day. Okay, it wasn't exactly weeding per se, just digging, but it involved the same cranking up of motor cortex and knee joints. The garden didn't really need weeding, but Leslie had been looking a bit peaky over breakfast, so preparations had to be made. Normally, of course, Leslie would be embalmed and go in the trunk in the attic with all the previous Leslies, but after 38 years, the trunk was now packed to capacity. Indeed, Ethelbert had been mildly perturbed upon closing the trunk on Leslie number 34 when, due to the unexpectedly springy nature of 33 other embalmed cats, Leslie number 34 had half popped out of the trunk, causing 2 paws to be chopped off when the lid was closed. As always on these occasions, Ethelbert fell to pondering her own mortality. Despite years of assiduous research, it appeared that self-embalming was physically impossible. Who could Ethelbert possibly trust to do the job properly? Cremation was not an option, because Ethelbert's body contained so many steel pins and other paraphernalia that the casket would in all probability explode like a faulty firework. After preparing a suitably feline-sized hole, the idea of Sunday lunch suddenly popped into Ethelbert's mind, like an MP popping into a bush on Hampstead Heath. A tedious leftward shuffling motion eventually brought into proximity the cabbage patch. As the digging progressed, Ethelbert was momentarily startled to strike something hard. Just a stone, probably, but no, this object was far too big for that. As more earth was moved aside, it revealed a thigh bone and 3 fingers. From the general size and condition of the bones, Ethelbert estimated that they had lain there for about 50 years and belonged to a man of roughly 6 feet 2 inches with a penchant for cravats, pickled onions and snooker. "Of course," exclaimed Ethelbert. "It's Terry. I can't remember putting him there." With a shrug, Ethelbert began to cover the bones and look for a better spot for Leslie number 36. It would be inconvenient for 36 to go before 35 because it spoiled the pattern, but so be it. Patting down the earth, Ethelbert experienced a few dislocated memories of Terry in a church with a top hat and a flower in his buttonhole, but their significance remained elusive. An hour later, and the cabbage was steaming away horribly. Nobody in the house liked cabbage at all, but Ethelbert tried to eat something green at least once a week. It was a penance of a sort, but it would take several million cabbages to wipe out all the sins committed in the house and garden since 1943. Elevenses meant homemade cake and Darjeeling for Ethelbert, pepperami and milk for Leslie and Leslie. The cats settled down by the fire and went to sleep. Ethelbert switched on Granada men and motors. Colin slid along the hallway like a hamster on Boxing Day. In other words, with a sense of increasing terror and a small buzzing sound in his right knee. He used his ninja training to approach the porch with the required stealthiness. When he was sure the coast was next to the sea, he quickly opened the door and retrieved the evil piece of small card from the special things that come in through the letterbox collection device mat he had knitted from the embalmed remains of a family dog. "I thought so," he grimaced as he read the words written in language on the card. "You could save yourself money by switching your oxygen supply to us." He threw the card into his special disinfecting evil waste basket and went to wash his hands 14 times. Putting on his balaclava and blonde wig, Colin went out to the back garden to feed his pet hedgehog, Dinsdale. It was costing him rather a lot these days, as Dinsdale was now 800 yards long. He'd struck it lucky this week, though, when he'd had the good fortune to accidentally run over 17 cows while test driving a steamroller. That would see Dinsdale through to the weekend, and all it had cost Colin was the price of the sesame seed baps and gherkins, without which, for some reason, Dinsdale would refuse any meal and kick off big time, which was something Colin always tried to avoid when dealing with 800-yard-long hedgehogs. Going back inside the house, Colin removed the balaclava and wig he always wore in the back garden to confuse the watching MI5 operatives into thinking that there were in fact two people living in the house. He had conducted this charade for 17 years, ever since returning from Budley Salterton. There was nothing to do with the pork pie. It was an exhausting charade to have kept up for 17 years, but Colin was confident that it would soon pay dividends and give him precious seconds in which to destroy the evidence when MI5 finally raided the house. From tuning into their radio broadcasts, he knew that it would be weeks rather than months, so he was already planning his escape. Indeed, the tunnel was nearly finished. Colin looked at his shopping list as he waited for the coast to become clear. Picklesome skepticism, invalidate a biscuit, counteract a magnetic field with Lego, follow Nick Clegg around for a few days, shaking my head and muttering quietly to myself until he gets the message. Butter no parsnips, hear no evil but see loads of it. amplify the concept of infinity until it becomes so huge it actually becomes really small, then try to sell it to Pakistan as an alternative test ground. Belatedly wave goodbye to a tryst. Marmite. Bin bags. Hedgehog toothpaste. And the conclusion of that exciting story, which be full of words and things, will be coming up in the next future episode, next time that you listen to it with your face and things. This has been the Midnight Insomnia podcast. And now, settle back, grease your hair, rotate your elbows, light up the sky, cream off the biscuits, and listen to the concluding musical somnambulistic tones. Relax and enjoy your shoes. Relax and enjoy your shoes.
Mm-hmm.